This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Good to have you all here. We so appreciate the support you give to the podcast, and we couldn't do it without you, so thank you. And we hope that we constantly bring you new and refreshing stuff, information, great guests like Brad Updegraff. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Carm. How are you?
I'm great, man. Dave's Ultimate Automotive, 6 locations, Austin, Texas. I met you in Atlanta at a NAPA conference. It was great to meet you. Great to meet you.
Likewise.
Listen, there's a great story here. We're going to talk about how he got where he is 12 years ago through a succession opportunity. We're going to talk about the prestigious NAPA Gold program and all your great steps along the way that got you where you are. I want to know about the secret to your employee retention. I want to know what you do to train your people, understand and learn your code of ethics, and how you put your vision on and see the future and are going to drive your company in the direction that it's going to take, I think, to have success over the next few years. I think it's going to be a little bit of a rocky road. I continue to hear that from people. But I want to go back, Brad, to, damn, you did high school automotive. I just love what I hear about that.
Yeah, it actually kind of came organically because my dad was supporting me on trying to help learn a little bit about, you know, how to work on his vehicle. And I realized I was braking more than I was fixing. It seemed like everything that looked like a bolt was loose, I was trying to tighten it. So, of course, I created a whole lot of gasket leaks and great things along the way. So definitely it was an effort to certainly make sure I didn't create any new problems for my father and certainly, know my own way around a vehicle, and took off from there.
So what was your first job ever?
Ironically, it wasn't even in the automotive field. I was actually a manager of a pizza delivery company in Round Rock, Texas, real close to Austin, got robbed and decided maybe food service wasn't right for me. So I happened to wind up in a small gas station repair shop, you know, that where I was a general service technician, oil changes, state inspections, things like that. And that was actually where I really kind of fell in love with the industry. I took the job really kind of as a necessity and happened to really just fall in love with it one day. I actually remember the vehicle too, just going out to it one day, and it was a Buick with a 3.8 liter. And I was supposed to be trying to diagnose why the battery was failing on this particular one. And I just remember the event, and it was almost like things just mechanically just started making more sense as I started thinking about him that day. And it really just kind of spurred this desire to kind of want to learn more.
It's no secret we're facing a technician shortage, but rest assured, NAPA Auto Care is addressing that one tech at a time with your help. The free 2-year apprentice program offers a variety of training to produce a technician through 9 stages of curriculum, earning 4 ASC certifications throughout the program. To learn more, members can visit member.napaautocare.com or contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store's sales rep. You started off in very humble roots and beginnings, automotive, pizza, and then shop work. We don't give credit enough. Oh my God, he was born with a golden spoon in his mouth. No. All of a sudden, he just fell into something. No. Did he really work that hard in order to become the vice president of training at a really big company? And did he really start out as a technician? Yes. I don't think we realize, Brad, that some of us really worked hard to get where we are today.
That's absolutely right. I definitely put in, I think my average week was 75 to 80 hours of work, including education, during that time in my life. I saw that as the necessary element. While I didn't have kids and other things in my life that were going to take away from that available time, to make sure I invested in myself and my education to try to become either a technician or a service advisor. I didn't quite know at the time, but I was going to try and learn it all because I didn't want any limitations at that point.
Brad, when your people hear you tell that story, do they, he's just pulling our leg because he wants us to work harder? Or do they really, really see and feel your passion?
You know, actually, some of them have asked about my story just organically through, you know, a test drive or something like that, where they find myself in a car with them. And they always seem very interested in where it came from and how I got to where I was. But every one of them hangs on to the story and recalls something about it. You know, when we're talking about it later, they might even reference something about, you know, what I told them at that time. I was actually quite amazed at how much it, you know, they were paying attention to, and I think drawing a connection to what they might be dealing with in their own personal lives.
Part of the lesson here, I believe, And it goes back to strategic planning and visioning, is to tell your story to your people, why you did what you did in 2012. I know you were working for this gentleman, Dave, but you ended up getting a deal in 2012, right?
Definitely. The opportunity kind of came out of nowhere. My goal was to just be in a good position to possibly open or co-own a location with Dave, you know, should he decide to open a third at that time. Didn't realize it, but he had actually decided to put the location I was working at the time up for sale. I actually had a manager that was working over me at the time, but apparently I had shined well enough in that first year of working for Dave that he selected me as somebody that could possibly partner up with this guy that was an investor that came in with no automotive knowledge. So
this is an incredible story. Yeah, you might say right time, right place, but I think it goes beyond that.
It's hard to honestly look back at in a way that can identify these steps in a, you know, humble way. But honestly, there are really some doors I had to walk through and risks I had to take that I can look back now and go, if I'd have chose the other option, we wouldn't be here today. So I absolutely agree with that. I mean, there was definitely some important steps that had to happen along the way.
A little luck, maybe?
A little bit.
People always say, gosh darn it. Yeah, I worked my butt off, but luck happened occasionally, you know, right time, right place. You had a partner, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, he actually was a gentleman that came out of the home building industry, kind of high-level executive, and really wanted a smart business investment in the Austin, Texas market, which is obviously a great market for all kinds of industries. Surprisingly, he chose automotive for some reason, but that got me into it. He didn't have any of the background. I had a lot of the background, but not a lot of business sense at that time. So we were able to really kind of merge what he knew and what I knew into an amazingly great partnership that worked great for store growth and development and culture building, which was huge.
I have, Brad, come up with just driving down to New York this past weekend with my daughter, Tracy, going to the big event. I came up with these words, stop trying. And I don't know where it came from. It just came. Stop trying. To anyone who's struggling in business, stop trying. It's not a negative way that you try again. But if it's not working, you almost have to stop trying and do something different. You're obviously a technician who got themselves an opportunity. When you signed the papers and you became the CEO slash president slash partner, oh my God, what do I do now? I got payroll, I got marketing. I mean, take us to that point where you said, I got to go get some training, some business sense.
Two different phases of that. One, when I partnered up for the first time, and now all of a sudden I'm a business owner. I've got a very strong financial backer supporter, but at the same time, I had never done anything besides run successfully one operation. And our job was to scale it and grow and try to duplicate what we were doing. So there was a whole lot of realizations I needed to have with myself about what I'm good at, what I'm not, and try to really strengthen in those areas. So I actually tried to, you know, focus on the not so fun stuff, speaking to groups, learning how to communicate effectively, learning different psychological profiles of people and things. And so a lot of the fun things you learn, you know, more from as an HR person, I think, than, you know, specifically a business owner. But that was the education I needed to make sure I could bring myself as a package to the equation and deliver a product that's going to be good for my people.
My big takeaway here is the not so fun stuff. That's really interesting. That's a heavy comment because I get it, you were a manager. I get it that you came up the ranks, but once you sign the papers, it's all about, you know, your responsibility to be successful and profitable. A lot of that stuff isn't fun unless you learn to make it fun.
Exactly.
Tell me about that learning curve. Obviously, you just told me you went and you got help. Did you read books? Did you find a mentor?
So a little bit of both. There was a great Dale Carnegie training program that came through a city very close to me. I signed up and went to a 3-day course, and that was probably the most raw and immediate exercise of those types of, you know, speaking to, you know, getting to know new people, networking and all those kinds of things. So it was just throwing myself into the fire. Never been a big book reader, but I'm really big into audiobooks. So they've come up popular lately. And so I actually got into some of the self-help styles. You know, the sales, I think, always comes with, you know, some good, you know, tactics and tools, you know, when you read good sales books. But probably the one that was the biggest difference maker for me, it was a book called Never Split the Difference, written by Chris Voss. And that actually helped me strategically in a lot of ways, not only in personal development, but also certainly in the business side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Great book. So you got store two and you said, I can do all this, you know, give me more weights. I can lift all of that. How many stores did you end up before you said, hey, I need some help. I need an integrator. I need a COO style person.
Partner and I grew 6 locations, including Dave's second one, in a total of 4 years. And that was a lot of growth. A lot of those were actually store turnovers where we were taking a different brand that was possibly failing or, you know, underperforming and rebranding it. So in a lot of cases, that was very high turnover, you know, acquisitions. And so we were, you know, having to try to figure out of the people we were bringing in, who was at the level that we were going to be able to train and keep, who we needed to exit out, but, you know, also trying to backfill those positions along the way in a talent pool that was really challenging in Austin was something that I think we're still trying to recover from. You know, I think 7 years ago is when our last expansion was. So
you're stable 7 years ago, you stopped growing. Was it by design or you're happy with the coverage in the marketplace? Why have you not grown?
I'm definitely happy with the footprint we have in the marketplace. Mainly, I wanted to pay attention to a few things. You know, we noticed certain methods we had for advertising. We were using a lot of direct mail when we would go into new environments. And so to try to generate a little bit of quick brand awareness and quick visibility, some coupons to try to create a now offer. Those don't transition well after you've already built a customer base. You wind up with, you know, kind of, I guess, just a different churn of your, you know, new and returning customer opportunities. So learning a little bit about what we needed to do differently strategically there, but also trying to figure out really how far our customers will come. You know, what kind of real geographic circle do we have in between our locations? And are they overlapping? And if so, is that a good thing? Or is there more customers to be able to pull from there? So we really spent several years really analyzing our growth and where the next logical steps were going to be. So now our growth isn't so much geographic limitations, it's personnel. There's still, you know, so much of a hiring challenge for quality individuals, for specifically high-level positions, that I think that is really probably the one thing that keeps me from comfortably moving into a new location, knowing that, you know, I can expect 80 to 100% turnover in that first year. I need to anticipate 7 to 10 positions that I'm going to need to have a good spot for. And in our current 6 locations, that we do run into challenges with full staff at times anyway. So I do certainly worry about that.
Where are you finding people? And or I guess my next curiosity is, how intense is your interviewing process?
First question, Indeed is probably our current biggest resource for finding folks. I do always prefer the internal network, though. And that's something we, you know, we tend to want to rescrub every 3 to 4 months or so, because, you know, people that have friends in the industry, that situation might have evolved in 3 to 4 months, right? So there's a constantly a you know, communication with, you know, our management teams and things to just make sure that we're staying involved with, you know, if they know the positions are open at other locations, if they happen to know anybody they would recommend first. I'll take somebody that's willing to refer a friend or family member over to me over a cold hire any day, because they're going to come with, you know, a level of, I think, expectation, I think, that comes with that.
Yeah, because they're already being pre-sold. I mean, they're coming in and saying, hey, so what's a day like? And do you have tools? And tell me about training. The person's coming in knowing a whole lot about your business because they've kind of, if you will, been quote-unquote recruited.
Definitely so. You know, we've actually started some kind of more groundwork programs with local school systems. So one of the school districts very close to us has an amazingly cool vocational technical program. They're actually in the middle of building a giant center that's going to be real close to us as well. We're helping out with, and that has been the beginnings of a really good relationship where we're going to be able to take somewhere between 3 and 4 students at an intern level every senior year and turn them into basically the technicians of tomorrow. Hopefully that they still want to work with us when they're ready to exit school. But, you know, that's our entry level kind of beginning point. We have some amazing programs inside the company that we do for training and getting technicians from a level where they're making an hourly wage up to the point of making flag, you know, rate pay, and certainly to the level of master technician. We have a support system for that entire process. I'd love to see a technician start and retire with me. That would be my dream if I could turn everyone in there.
Brad, I got to tell you, I don't think our youth today has a clue how technical our business is. It's not an easy business. I get all that. But I don't believe we are a technical trade and we're not sold as that. Our image is terrible. Hollywood has really hurt the image of our industry. And the people inside of it will look at it and say, oh, it's too bad that the outside world looks at us as bums and wrenches and greased up and everything. So the point that I've been making a lot lately, since I wrote The Rise of the Mechanical and Technology Specialist, did this language shift that I want to have happened in the industry, speaking to our youth. Again, I don't need to put these words in your mouth, but you get a chance to speak to young people, you're there. And we're not doing enough of that as an industry. Every owner who's listening to this, every technician, technology specialist, mechanical specialist that's listening to this, please put your hand up and go to Career Days and go speak to some of the vocational schools or vocational subjects that are becoming, I think, reborn again in schools, and tell them, do you love working with your hands? You ever take something apart at home? Walk them down that whole kinetic style of learning, and we've got jobs for you. Who loves computers? Put your hands up. Been in mom or dad's car lately? Do you have any idea that there's like 126 modules or computers that run that vehicle and maybe even more? Would love to have a tablet, lab scope, maybe even a white lab coat. Who knows one day that we have Gracie do that.
There is already a network of students interested in an automotive program. And what's been really sad is that the dealerships and the factories have had their hand in that from the beginning. And this, you know, so yeah, we're having to kind of work our angle into the youth right now. But I would certainly say that's definitely, as far as that not fun category we talked about, trade, you know, going to career, you know, fairs and places like that is definitely the uncomfortable area that is so important. I can honestly say it's been so valuable. We've been to, I think, 3 or 4 in the last 2 years now, specifically with this Pflugerville district. And the kids are amazing. You start recognizing them. They recognize you when they come back. And all of a sudden, you start seeing that there's actually interaction there. It's not just a kid, you know, staring at a phone the whole time. They are truly actually paying attention. And the engagement from that is really actually very motivational. It had me wanting to go back to the next one and setting up dates to actually go and talk to schools about their, you know, in their automotive program, about different opportunities other than the dealership and stuff. And so far, the schools seem to be pretty okay about letting us in.
That's great news. Got to get on those advisory boards, because you're right about the dealers. Hey, I got a lot of great friends at the dealers, but we are not represented well enough. Is there a business development group from NAPA in your town?
No, in fact, that's actually one of my tasks this year.
Frankly, you should be the one who joins the community college in your area on their advisory board so that the independents do get a voice. I did a great interview the other day on young mechanics, young technicians, were 7 to 12-year-olds, and they come in the shop on a Saturday and they go through all these kind of cool stations with tools and wrenches and bolts, and they actually see things being done. And apparently, the shop owners had like 60, 80 kids sign up for this thing, and they only promoted it in social media, and it's full.
Wow. Was that Ryan out of Idaho by the chance?
No, it's not. But there are some people that are doing it. And, you know, the beauty of what we do in this show is we take, hear the passion of you and the ideas that you're working on. I mean, you're doing some really cool things, and we got a lot to talk about yet. But all the community things that you do, I guess this kind of relates to, oh my God, Donate Vehicles, Make-A-Wish, Suicide Prevention, St. Jude, Children's Miracle Network. God bless you for doing that.
Thank you. It's important to me. Giving back is, I think, something that as we grew and as we were able to recognize our success, I wanted to make sure we notched out a very important part of that success to where we can continue to give back in a lot of different ways, right? And so some of those big foundations, Make-A-Wish, and some of the local suicide prevention companies we work with, the Women of Austin company that basically supports women-owned businesses and entrepreneurs in Austin. So many awesome folks that we work with locally and nationally with Make-A-Wish. It's just, it feels wonderful. It's honestly just one of the best feel-goods that we have every year.
So just tell somebody that you know. You have a chance to get on your soapy right now and just tell a shop owner, get off your butt and do this.
Absolutely. There's no reason not to. I think aside from, you know, the feel good you get, there's also a very important business footprint you have when you have a relationship with your community. It's more than just the shop at the end of the corner. You are now a supporting system for local school networks, different things that you can certainly help whatever your community needs are.
Hey, have you visited the NAPA Auto Care member site lately? Well, since its relaunch in 2020, the NAPA Auto Care member site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the NAPA programs, promotions, member benefits, and business building tools to help your business thrive. Some features to the member's site include never miss an update, stay current with notifications and announcements on the homepage, and view the dashboard featuring your shop's financial status. Also, take advantage of cost-saving member-exclusive promotions and a faster automated 24/24 peace-of-mind warranty submission process. Submit re-repair claims directly on the member's site and easily check the status there as well. Now, typically, the claim is settled and EFT or credit card payment is sent within 48 hours. Turn searches into a new customer with a referral tracker. Now learn more about how a consumer NAPA online search for your shop can generate new customers at no additional cost to members. Use this popular customer tool to evolve your marketing strategies and to get the most business value. Own more than one NAPA Auto Care? Link all your facilities to one login and access all the facilities to one user. You can also access the Shop NAPA Helm or Pro Office website directly. You can also submit a Pro Image free look for a sneak peek at how you can co-brand your locally known name with a nationally recognized NAPA brand. Also, submit online ASE certification renewal and test reimbursements. You also get exclusive access to dozens of industry-leading programs and solutions. Now, if you're a NAPA Auto Care member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal and take advantage of these many member benefits today. Now, if you're not a NAPA Auto Care Center, contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the NAPA family. Honor that you have of being NAPA Gold certified. It's a pretty heavy lift to get that. All six locations are on it. You were the first in what, Austin, to get it?
Yes, sir.
What does it get you from NAPA by having achieved that?
The standout for me initially was the fact that at the time, you know, the two-year 24,000-mile program that had kind of everybody else in the industry had kind of caught up to what NAPA Auto Care was already doing, right? So it was like, okay, well, how do we make that even better? The gold status, right? And so that, to me, it helps identify not just with auto care centers, but basically a next level tier of automotive expectation that customers and employees can expect out of a particular company. To be able to offer a nationwide warranty now at 3 or 36,000 is just outside the industry standard anywhere. It's basically something you can give to somebody that's tangible, right? Inside baseball, I mean, we've already had so much of the NAPA Auto Care built into the way we operate that, you know, some of the extra benefits, you know, the marketing dollars and things like that, I had to actually think about and go use because it was, you know, we're so used to using Trax and Easy Pay. And gosh, you know, we've done the auto tech training pretty much, you know, since it was available to us. So, you know, we were so involved with, you know, kind of already what auto care means to us that some of those extras were like, oh yeah, I forgot. I need to make sure I do that. You know, being able to use marketing dollars every year towards programs that you already use in your system, like AutoServe, or if you were interested in bringing in something and you were trying to figure out how to justify that added expense of, you know, bringing in a DVI program if you didn't have something like that, and you really don't want to gamble on the ROI change of, you know, having a DVI in there. That's $1,500 a year right there that you're able to use towards that, right? That covers quite a bit of it. So, yeah.
And you also got people to call.
Yes, yes. It's such a great network. I mean, meeting the people up there this last time I was in Atlanta was awesome too. It really, you get to see exactly where it all begins, you know, so where your connection points are.
Speaking of auto tech training, what's your magic to get your people involved in training and not saying, I don't want to go to training. I know everything, or I can look it up.
Carm, I was hoping you had a magic pill for me.
I do. Actually, I'm saying all this for one reason. I don't know if you know Ben Dexter with NAPA Tracks. Well, I interviewed Ben recently, and in our icebreaker call before we actually did it, trying to formulate the scope of the episode. So you worked all those years, you know, as a kind of COO, general manager of this operation, grew it from, you know, to millions of dollars. And I said, what's your secret of getting people to training? Because I ask this a lot of people. And he said, drive them.
That's about right. Yeah.
You love that?
Yeah.
It's that simple. Two words, drive them.
Drive them there.
And he said, if I was asking them to go to this particular seminar, even though I don't turn wrenches anymore, I want to know what they're learning. I may not pay 1,000% attention, but I'm going to pay 100% attention, and I'm going to walk away with questions, and I'm going to see what can we use this for and what else can we do with this training, because I don't want them to think that the training is below me. I'll drive them there.
I love it. Totally love it. I used to go with my guys, actually. And that was actually, I think, probably one of the things that created the best involvement is if the owner's going to go, you're not going to not show up, you know, if you've already signed up to go to that class, right? So I think me going, partly because I wanted to make sure there was a level of accountability with it, but also still enough in the business where I wanted to continue my mechanical knowledge absorption and certainly any new techniques along the way that were helping service advisors. I'd love to be there to help, you know, and keep accountable. So
I'm not a wrench. The whole world knows that. I think it's a benefit because I end up bringing my curiosity to the episode. And although I have a huge business background and leadership background, which is what we do on this show, we want to help people make more money and be successful and climb out of a terrible hole they may be in. I love asking these kinds of questions, and I hear a lot of work-life balance stuff. I hear an awful lot of, my God, Carm, if you don't go to training, you know, you're going to evaporate, either educate or evaporate. And this past weekend, I was in New York City with Tracy. We had our studio. We were at the big event, for the TST big event. And I was listening to a couple of trainers, and my mind became Swiss cheese. Just from what I was realizing that everyone in that room needed to learn, needed to know, needed to understand, so they could be better at what they were doing, so they could please the customer better, make money for the owner, because efficiency ends up becoming a really critical piece of success. I was blown away. Period. We're getting ready to go to the new Napa EV training center in Canton, Ohio soon and hang out there and see what's going on. And you know, again, mind gets to be Swiss cheese, but the people that are in it, and they're in it for real, they're in it for earnings, this is their profession. How could they not want to be a perpetual student?
So honestly, I think there's different types of people out there. And I think the people like you and I are talking about are the folks that naturally you're going to try to absorb and hire in your company, right? Those are the folks that are magic makers, right? And they're also inspirational for some people that really just need some direction in their life, right? So if, you know, obviously, you know, going and taking these classes and, you know, leading by example is great. But, you know, when you can have somebody that just has that sauce and magic in the shop that can also talk about it and promote it and build it up to what it really should be, then I think it kind of happens organically from there, congruently, you know?
I love it. Thank you for a brand new term that I can start using. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Do you have any magic makers on staff?
Magic makers, yeah.
Because I love to talk about these really crazy things. Is what the hell's he talking about? When you say stuff like this to somebody, you get their attention. And then you walk down the aisle of the people who want to be perpetual students, who want to do their own case studies, who will take stuff home to read, you know, at night instead of, you know, watching brainless TV and upgrade themselves. And to your point, magic maker is an individual who could sometimes look at something. Wayne Colonna from ATSG, and he says, Carm, there's this transmission that GM put out. It was like for 16 years, but after the 12th year mark, they made a major change in a very tight tolerance on one of the solenoids in the vehicle, and everybody assumes it's the same transmission. Go out and buy one or get one, throw it on, and the car doesn't or go forward. It doesn't run because we take so many assumptions and things. And if we had gone to training, then we probably would have learned it along the way, and we would stop and respect that a 2017 may not be necessarily the same as a 2018. Looks damn the same. They didn't change anything. They probably changed a ton underneath the covers.
Exactly.
We're making an assumption. So we need magic makers. I love that, Brad.
You know, another training aspect that I actually just recently learned about and am ready to go all in with kind of nods to, you had talked about what, how to get technicians and different generations interested. It was a company called Today's Class. I'm sure you've heard of them. Oh my gosh.
Love. Oh God. Yeah. David Boies. Love him. Yeah.
That guy, if they're not public yet, they should be, because that's an amazingly cool company.
Brad, we did a great episode at Vision with him and two shop owners who are all in on his program. In fact, one of the shop owners, 5-store group, maybe it's 6 right now, AJ Neely. And AJ participates in Today's Class and the whole gaming thing of, you know, who's really answering all the right questions and stuff. It was a hoot. It was a blast of an episode. And you know, sitting across from David, there's 4 of us in the studio, and I'm just watching him be so proud and smiling to see these shop owners so engaged in this perpetual learning thing that Today's Class brings you.
That was super attractive to me, and I can't wait to bring it into my company.
You should. If you need any information, I'll get you David Boies' email and you could jump in on that. Hey, so what are you doing to keep your people? You know, I saw this great career recruiting video from some of your people. You walk on water.
I pay them really well. Now, obviously, you know, we do certainly, I love my group. They're just the best. It's really cool when we've got some foundational folks that have grown with the company, and they're some of the best advocates because they've known me from the beginning. I'm not any different now than I was 10, 15 years ago, as far as how I operate, you know, the type of owner you're going to expect out of me, how I carry my temperament and everything else, right? So I think the legend of me is really probably more better told from them. I just come to work every day and try to just basically come through the door like I'm having the best day of my life and really just try to bring that energy. Because if you can provide that to your organization, I think it just helps everybody kind of start off in a better place, right? Or at least not worry about when the owner's walking through the door and stuff like that. You know, it's really nice having your name as Dave's Ultimate Automotive and your name be Brad, because I can walk through the building as Brad every day and never get looked at as an owner, you know, from anybody that doesn't know me. So it's kind of nice to be able to kind of get in there like that. And as far as like team building and things, I mean, we have like amazingly cool Christmas parties and we try to do some fun things. We really celebrate, you know, birthdays. Anybody that has a birthday, it's noted in our employment system. So we know that given week or month, we're going to have, you know, like a little cookout at the shop for them, you know, versus the, at least the, if nothing else, the organization and that particular store is going to, you know, take their time and celebrate that guy. We pay attention to when they're going on vacations and things like that. And we really want to, you know, keep up. I like to keep up with that. It's kind of like a relationship builder when they understand that, you know, I know they were gone for a week, but I also know where they went and, you know, probably want some info about it when they get back.
I love what you said. You know, how many times have back in the day that we celebrated birthdays for our peoples all the time, but when they celebrate yours and you say, oh, come on, don't do this. I don't want to do this. But then at the end, there's a feel good there. As much as people say, no, don't do this, there's a feel good and they remember how they got it.
Yeah, that's very true. It's like a second family, you know?
It is. So how often do you get out to the stores?
I'm in one right now. I'll tell you my work schedule. I actually committed Wednesdays, smack in the middle of the week, to taking the day off, and I give it to my wife. Since our kids are in school and, you know, in some cases our weekends are pretty busy with whatever's kid related and stuff, I've committed one day a week, every week to my wife, making sure that her and I can maintain our relationship at a high level. That's given me a lot of flexibility to do what I need to during 4 days of the week. So the other 4 days of the week, I'll be in typically in this home office location, but traveling out to any of our locations as needed. They see me enough to know, you know, certainly if anything was going on negative.
When you're out there, and I've been on this MBWA kick, managed by walking around kick. Lately, I've been saying it an awful lot on podcasts, and hopefully people say, well, Carm, enough. We've heard enough of it. But I think there's enough response happening out there where people are saying, you know what? Carm's making a great point. So are the people on his show. I, you know, especially multi-shop owners, even single shop owners where the owner is, you know, he says, listen, I'm graduated from all of this stuff and I just want to run the business from this higher level. I don't think so. I think, you know, think about the intuition that you have. Think about the common sense. Think about the policies that you put in place and think about you always testing that.
Right. That's a great point, Carm. I actually tried it out. I had a year where I was had to focus quite a bit of my time on my family, right? And I had a regional manager, fortunately, that thinks and operates very much like me, trained by me, and certainly is kind of like a duplicate of me if I had to, you know, if I had to step out, right? His intuition wasn't the same as mine. I think an ownership owner has a different look at life than you know, even somebody at a high level management does. But even just, I think, simply instinctually, I think there were just differences that helped me identify really quick that this isn't a long-term solution. It was a great solution for what I needed that time, but I absolutely need to make sure that I'm involved on a day-to-day operation side of things. Not necessarily in it, but certainly at a point where I'm able to, you know, continue relationships out there.
Good for you. Will you ever do the same kind of succession that you had when you bought Dave's for an internal candidate? Do you have any children coming up?
So my kiddos, no, they're definitely not interested in the biz. But fortunately, some of my core group that's grown with the company is getting some opportunities. Particular one store manager I'm working with right now, it's going to have the actual first legitimate opportunity. It's based on pretty much a complete equitable role that's going to evolve for him. So yeah.
Brilliant. Good for you. Okay. Let's talk about the industry. Let's talk about how you view what's going on, maybe as you see the Austin market, but the future growth opportunities. Are we, what kind of challenges do you foresee and opportunities?
This industry is cyclical. I think we've been on an extremely positive run for a good long amount of time. I've noticed just in the last few months, I'd say it was trending towards November of last year, it seemed that search traffic had dropped off substantially where folks weren't looking for auto repair service. And that it told me at the time we needed to certainly invest heavier into marketing to try to capitalize there, but also change strategies and try some other things. I believe we're actually at the beginning of a bit of a market correction with regards to the Austin area. I think there's so many shops currently out there that I think there's currently just more shops than there are necessarily cars to fix in the current situation. And I think what'll happen over time is that probably we're going to see a bit of a correction in, at least what I saw in 2008 was the correction we had then was some of the smaller shops dropped off. When that happened, there was definitely an influx of personnel opportunities that came from that, being able to find some good talent that actually was gainfully employed previously and being able to offer something that maybe a company that was smaller at the time wasn't able to. I also see a really good opportunity for customers to convert as well. A lot of the shops that closed down, like that little gas station shop I started at was actually one of the shops that closed down about 4 years ago. Those customers have to go somewhere, right? And so being in that position.
Are you talking about fighting for share? You're really talking about that, right?
Market share, definitely, definitely.
Fighting for market share. And why is it slowed down in your opinion? Is it the money's dried up?
I think there's a combination. I think we're in that perfect storm of high interest rates. We hit that point in car production. I think vehicles were being overproduced. And so now I think there's, if I remember right, I think there was too many. I'm a backup. I don't even necessarily know the data behind that, but I believe there was something regarding the industry sales at a particular year that had some relation to last year. I don't remember specifically what that was, but
I can't help you with that. I don't remember it myself, but yeah, we are driven off of that.
A lot of things have evolved since COVID as well too. You know, it seems like a lot of folks are able to work from home and they're utilizing their vehicles differently. So what was weird is that, you know, when I heard it recently at the NAPA conference I was at, there was actually a higher miles driven metric. And I think an older vehicle metric that was actually better too. So
I think you're right about money. I think there's an awful lot of downsizing going on with companies. I think there's some layoffs. I think people are worried about that. And although the stock market is healthy where it is, but there's an awful lot of people that don't have a big enough share in the stock market that their nest egg is, you know, they're building their nest egg. And it's not like they're getting ready to live off of their nest egg. Paycheck to paycheck, I keep hearing that, 60% of the people. So when you got to get that vehicle fixed, maybe the fact that, you know, you've got financing options for people is critical and important today. I mean, yeah, that's a great question. Are people taking advantage of that?
You know, it seems like more, yes. Money's certainly not cheap right now, you know, for lending. And certainly, I think people consider financing repair over, you know, financing a replacement vehicle at this point. Absolutely. So we've certainly seen, we've utilized that option, the finance option, a lot more as a sales tool.
I love this interview. This was great. You're dialed in, my friend, and you have a great, beautiful big business. And I can't wait to hear about your next store.
I'm excited to be able to share when that comes because it's not an if, it's a when. I just got to be strategic.
Because you've been in dry dock for a while. That's what I keep thinking.
Yeah. I feel like I've recovered and analyzed more than I need to now. So I'm ready.
Well, good for you. Here's a guy who's open 5 days a week in Austin doing real well. And he works four because he gives one to his wife and the family. That's a great thing. We're not doing enough of that.
You mentioned work-life balance, and that was definitely a commitment I had to make along the way, or the wheels would have fallen off somewhere along the way.
Okay, so here's the deal. You look back how hard you worked to get to where you are today. Would you have done it differently?
No, I really wouldn't have.
I'm with you, man. I am so with you. And I
appreciate every position I've been in this industry to get to where I'm at right now. And I remember what it was like to be in every one of those positions along the way. It just makes me a better boss to be that guy.
It's amazing sitting, listening to a person like you, and I can't help but be flushed with my own memories when I was working for corporate America. And I was never home. 3 days a week, I was out. And if it wasn't for Anne being a stay-at-home mom who raised the kids in their formative years, was she happy I was gone? No. It was what I did. You know, you work 70, 80 hours a week, whatever the number was, you had this dream, this passion, you did what you did. Thank God that she and the family survived with and or without you, depending on when you were or weren't home. And that the whole work-life balance, sometimes it takes us way too long to figure it out.
That's for sure.
Way, way too long. And there's a few things that I always look back and I regret, but there was one of those things I signed on the bottom line. This was my job. You had everything to risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I didn't mean to bring this thing down on a downer, and it's not.
Not at all.
Because in my mind, there are so many opportunities that we do these shows for the people that are in struggle zone and, you know, that they, wow, hopefully I can grow up one day and be like Brad, or wait a minute, that was a great thing that he said that will really spark me from getting out of my own dumps and finding, you know, a way to get up and to get better. But as you well know, and we always warn our audience, this is not an overnight thing. You did not have overnight success.
Definitely not. Definitely not. And I certainly made plenty of mistakes along the way too. So, yeah.
Right up to Graf. Dave's Ultimate Automotive, 6 locations, Austin, Texas, Napa Gold, the first one in Austin. Man, thank you so much for being here. I learned so much.
Thank you for having me, Karma. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.